Thank you very much for introducing me, and even much more, thank you very much to the organizers, of whom you are one, for all the work they have done for us and for all the organization. It's a very nice semester here. I had the pleasure to be here already since 2 months, and I enjoyed it a lot, so thank you very much to all of the organizers. Thank you also for you, the audience, to be here, for your interest in the talk. The talk is on joint work with Tan Van Tran, who is maître de conférence at ENS Hanoi. However, I also will speak about a lot of other results. In this case, of course, then I will give the authors and the references. What mathematics is concerned, I will speak about a second main theorem for moving hypersurface targets. So far today, we had already two talks for targets in one dimension. Now I will move to multi-dimension. We also had one talk, this was the second today, where it was a question of truncation in case of moving targets. There we had optimal truncation, meaning truncation 1. This I will not be able in the higher dimensional setting, but I will get at least some truncation, which also will give us access to all the applications like unicity theorems and all this stuff. I will talk about this. Let me first of all, for your convenience, introduce or recall some notations. Although I believe that most of you, of course, will know this already. I will consider non-constant meromorphic maps from M-dimensional to N-dimensional, where M and N do not have to have any relations. Of course, the most interesting case is the case for M equal to 1, meaning for holomorphic entire curves, because there you have the most flexibility somehow to detect geometric structures in the target. And this is a technical thing. I also assume that I have reduced representation. That means by the Cousin 2 problem, which can be solved over CM, I can cut out all joint divisors of codim or joint divisors, meaning analytic subsets of codimension 1, so that I only might have joint zeros of codimension 2. This means, in particular, if I'm looking at entire curves, this phenomenon does not appear at all, but I want to be more general. I want to make it immediately for meromorphic maps, and there you can have this phenomenon which geometrically boils down to points of indeterminacy. Okay, you know very well that the characteristic function of such a map is there to measure somehow the growth, or how wildly, geometrically said, how wildly a meromorphic map, or specifically an entire curve, behaves. There are many possibilities to define this, which are all equivalent up to an additive constant. And since in Nevelina theory we are finally looking at the limit behavior where r goes to infinity, additive constants, of course, they do not play. Here I will take a presentation just using the log of a norm, where the norm I will choose as the point-wise maximum of the norms of the component function. And sigma is nothing else than the surface element on the boundary of the ball with radius r, which is normalized by 1. Okay, I want to work about for moving targets. And of course, if the targets are moving, then I have to put this also somehow in mathematics, how they are moving. Of course, as you can imagine, if the targets move at the same speed as the curve, then we cannot say anything anymore, at least in the sense of second main theorem. So what we need is that the targets are moving slower than our map, and this is expressed simply by the fact that the characteristic functions of the functions which describe the moving are small compared to f. And in fact, I consider the meromorphic functions having this property, and as it is easy to show by some basic properties of characteristic function, they form a field which will allow us to do algebraic geometry over this field. Okay, I must not forget this. Oh, what happens here? Why does this? It's fine. Here, it was a wrong picture here. Now, in order to describe moving targets geometrically, what I will consider is, I will consider polynomials which give us hypersurfaces, as you all know, in projective spaces, but not with coefficients which are constant, but with coefficients which are themselves these slowly moving, or these meromorphic functions of small growth compared to f. This is a concept how we put moving targets, or in this case slowly moving targets in mathematics. I also will need not only the field of slowly moving targets, but in order to have better results, I will consider the field which is generated by the coefficients of given polynomials. In this case, I do not need the field which is generated by all coefficients, since you know that if I have a homogeneous polynomial, then what it has geometric relevance is only the quotient of coefficients and not the coefficient itself. So it is sufficient in order to have a field which is adapted to the coefficients to look at all quotients. And that is exactly what I do here. This is one concept. Et voila. The next concept is the truncated counting function. Of course, the question is how to define truncated or even counting function for moving targets. The easiest way is just to plug in the meromorphic map into the equation of the target and just to count the zeros of this function, because this is just to count the zeros of the function of qf0 to fn. Let me recall this concept, especially since here we are with multidimensional domains, which we have not yet had today. So if you have a meromorphic function, this is a meromorphic map also to P1, then I take a reduced representation and I count the zeros of the numerator after I have taken a reduced representation. So I don't take the full divisor, I just take the divisor of the zeros here. And then what I do is classically, I take the minimum of this zero divisor and a given number L. That means I cut it off at L. If it's smaller than L, I count just the real multiplicity. If it is bigger than L, I cut it off at L. And then I just integrate this V phi here with norm. This is just the support of this divisor. And I integrate this with the volume element of 2n minus 2, so that means I integrate here the divisor over the volume element adapted to the divisor, and afterwards I take the logarithmic integral, but not with dt over t as in the one-dimensional case, but this is t to the 2m minus 1. Another notation, which is standard in value distribution, which you know very well, any kind of second main theorems, unless you restrict functions having only finite order, need exceptional sets. So I will introduce a notation double bar P. That means property P holds outside a Borel set of finite measure. Okay, Then the next notation is general position. You know that general position for hyperplanes, that means that the coefficient vectors of the hyperplane, whenever you take n plus a subset of n plus 1, is a basis of Cn plus 1. How to generalize this for hypersurfaces? Now you generalize it by the geometry. That means, first of all, if you take hyperplanes, then general position means if and only if n plus 1 of these hyperplanes do not have any intersection point. And this property you generalize, so that means you generalize it in a way. General position means whenever you take n plus 1 of them, they do not have intersection point. Now, of course, our coefficients are not no entire numbers anymore, but functions. And then you demand, you have two possibilities to generalize it. One is general position, or sometimes also pointwise general position. That means for any value of the parameter, which then really gives coefficients which are complex numbers, you demand that they are in general position. Or you will put what I call your weakly general position. You demand this only for the generic coefficient. In fact, it is sufficient to demand it for any kind of a point, and then by semi-continuity you have it already for generic coefficients. This definition seems to be a little bit complicated, but don't forget that our coefficients functions are meromorphic functions, although slowly growing ones. This does not at all avoid to have, for example, points of indeterminacy in the coefficient function. So we have to be a little bit careful to demand to define this in one. This is one possibility, just using that you have one point where all coefficients are entire or are complex numbers, and where they are in general position, and then it's already true for the generic one. But however, of course, you will have even a codimension one subset where they are not in pointwise general position with such a definition. Okay, then we can formulate the second main theorem. We have a non-constant meromorphic map from Cm to Pn as introduced. Now we have Q homogeneous polynomials in weakly general position, polynomials with coefficient function which are slowly moving. You assume that F is algebraically non-degenerate, but of course not over C, but over the coefficients of the field generated by the coefficients of the Q, because this is to some extent the moving frame or the reference to, with respect to which you need algebraic non-degeneracy. And then we have a second main theorem in the sense that for all epsilon, we can find positive integers LG, which depend only on the dimension of epsilon and on the degrees, such that we have a second main theorem in the classical form, which is where the multiplicities are truncated by the LG. And I'm saying that they depend in an explicit way on these data. In order to underline it, although it's a little bit technical, I even gave you the result in a precise way. In fact, the LG can be bounded here in an explicit way by degrees, respectively the least common multiple of the degrees. Of course, it depends on the degree. And then here you find two other terms. This is n plus n over n, where the small n, of course, is dimension. The big n is still to define, and then you have a t part here. In fact, it will turn out that this part is a part which moving and fixed targets share. However, this part here, the t plus 1, this will be 1 in case of fixed, in the special case of fixed targets, and this will be the contribution which is additional from moving targets. Let me now go to the next slide in order to have more about these formulas. So you still have the basic formula here, and now I explain you what is the n and the t. In fact, the n is an expression in the dimension, the degree, and also, unfortunately, the epsilon interferes still. Then I introduced two helping variables, the M capital M and the capital L, and then the P0 can be expressed in them, and the TP0 also. But keep in mind that capital M, capital L is just to make a nicer writing. In fact, in the paper I gave one huge formula, but then I discovered in the slide style this will more or less, it was impossible to put it on the slide in a way that you still can read it, so I broke it up. And this is the remark which I made already. In case, we will see why, in case of fixed target, the TP is 1, and so you're just left with this part here. So this is the principal result which I want to present you today. Capital M is N plus N over N, and the N is described there. Capital M is just an auxiliary variable in order to have this formula a little bit shorter. I could, of course, here for every appearance of M and L, I could put these twos, but then this line here explodes. This was the problem. So it was just a technical trick in order to present you a readable formula here in this one. Okay, some easy corollaries of it. First of all, of course, also in the moving the target hyperplane or hypersurface case, you have a first main theorem, which is much easier. This is just more or less, first main theorem always says that the counting function is bounded by d times, the characteristic function d times, because we have divisors of degree d here, plus a negligible term. Usually in first main theorem, of course, you have an O of 1, if at all, but you cannot have, because here you still have the influence of the coefficient, which are small, but nevertheless there, so this is what makes here the small O of T of F. Then the defect, as you know, is defined as a lim inf of the defect, to some extent, of the counting function to be maximal. This is evidently zero if at the limit this N behaves as T. And then, of course, by a very easy manipulation, unfortunately this Patriot second main theorem has disappeared now already, by just putting over the n's to the other side, and by taking limits, we get from this that the sum of the defect is bounded by n plus 1. In the one-dimensional case, in the two talks, we had that the defect is 2, n plus 1. Yeah. There's a small remark. Of course, it would be desirable to have, since we have truncated counting function in our second main theorem, it would be desirable also to have a truncated defect relation. Of course, we can introduce the truncated defect. This is possible. But what will happen is that whenever I take the lim inf, either I leave the epsilon in, that means I have defect n plus 1 plus epsilon, or I let the epsilon go to 0. But as soon as I let the epsilon go to 0, since my truncation, as you still see here, depends on epsilon to the minus 1, this will explode. So this is not the best possible defect relation, which would be this with delta truncated. I have two possibilities for the moment, either let plus epsilon here or take the usual defect. But it's at least close to optimal, and it might be quite difficult to get rid of the epsilon here. Okay, then I want to talk a lot about related results in order to give you a wider a panorama, and also to do honor to my colleagues who have already worked on this. Let me first of all recall two results of Min Ru, who did the case of fixed targets of this second main theorem, even in the case of projective varieties where the targets are just cut off by global divisors after an embedding. He gave a talk on this in Montreal. Let me nevertheless recall the result. You have now, instead of Pn, you have just a variety in Pn of dimension small n, and then you cut with n hypersurfaces such that they are in general position on V. That means after cutting with V, you have empty intersection, and then you have the same result. This was his result in 2.8 question mark. Question mark means the paper has been accepted but not yet appeared, and of course I don't know if it still will appear this year or not. So meaning this means to appear. The one which already did appear is an American journal, M of Mass 04. This was just the case where V is equal to Pn, and this is to some extent the basis on which we approved the generalization. I recall you, we generalized two things. We generalized to moving target, and we brought a truncation in. I also will remark that in the case, even for moving hyperplanes, the result already had been proved by Ruh Stoll much earlier, I think without truncation. This morning I was not 100% sure. I was sometimes under impression they had a truncation in the, I remarked it. But in any case, it's very, very difficult to get optimal truncation, especially for moving targets. In the n-dimensional case, what you should expect or should hope at the end to have is optimal truncation is by n. You will certainly not get one. But especially in the moving target cases, I think even in hyperplane case, some other specialists for hyperplanes can correct me. My feeling is that we're still far away from having truncation with n in moving hyperplane case. And so even though it's only one-dimensional case, the work of Yamanois is, of course, really a very good thing. Okay, this is the first page of results which I want to see. Now, question, what has been done so far with truncation? There I want to mention the recent result of An Fuong. They did truncate, or they brought truncation in, even an effective truncation, as we also do, in the case of fixed hypersurface targets. The result is the same unless we just have a truncation in. And we also should remark that Yan Chen, they also had some kind of truncation in the fixed hypersurface targets. An Fuong, they get effective estimates. Of course, effective estimate is much more important than just to have any kind of fixed even moving target truncation, because the effective estimate is that what gives you possibility to do something with it afterwards. Of course, I can mention that in the first version of our second main theorem, we also had, first of all, a truncation without making it effective. But then Professors Ruh and Noguchi told me in Tokyo, I think it was in July, that exactly what I said now, that truncation without effective bounds is not worthwhile too much. And then we sat down again and brought and refined our proof to bring effective truncation in. And in parallel, An Fuong, they also did it for the fixed target case. Okay, I can mention already here, I will come back to this a little bit later, that all of these kinds of results, in the results of Min Ru included, are based finally on a basic technique introduced by Corvaya and Sanier in the case of Diophantine approximation. Ru brought it to Nevalina theory, and we finally brought it to moving targets, respectively, independently with An and Fuong to truncation. Okay, since this workshop is mainly on hyperbolicity, let us also discuss a little bit on hyperbolicity and related applications. Hyperbolicity, of course, does not have to do too much with moving targets. So that means the only question which for hyperbolicity you can ask is the complements of hypersurface divisors are hyperbolic with fixed targets. In fact, so that means this is an easy application of the result already of Min Ru, and what you get is that we have, if you have at least n plus two hypersurfaces in general position, then any entire curve is algebraically degenerate, because this is what you get from a second main theorem. Second main theorem always says, if you are not algebraically degenerate, then you have the inequality. So that means if you do not have the inequality because you're omitting all the divisors, that means F is algebraically degenerate. You cannot conclude by this that F is already constant. And however, this result, only the pure hyperbolicity result, is much older. This is already, I think, in the thesis of Mark Green. So that means on hyperbolicity, this does not give anything new, but of course we have to know that second main theorem is much more than just the hyperbolicity result, because hyperbolicity of the complement means you are not hitting the divisors at all, so that means all the counting functions are identically zero. However, here this gives, the second main theorem gives you a quantitative version, but what happens if you hit the divisor and how much you can maximally hit it. Or even not had it. Okay, on the other hand, of course, questions of algebraic degeneracy of entire curves, this has a meaning with respect to moving targets, because you can move the targets in the main way as the entire curve. And then we have a trivial corollary of our second main theorem in this way, in the same way as upstairs. Just saying that if you have an entire or even a non-constant meromorphic map in our case, which is omitting all the divisors, then it has to be algebraically degenerate. There's a subtlety with omitting the divisors, because keep in mind that our coefficient functions are meromorphic functions, and we define the NF RQ by the zeros of Q composed F. Of course, Q composed F can very well expose zeros, even if F is not hitting Q. For example, if you have indeterminacy points of coefficient function, but fortunately this can only happen to lower order of F, so you still can conclude. In fact, this can be avoided if you assume that all the coefficient functions for each divisor are also in reduced representation. I assume this for F. However, I do not want in general assume this for the coefficient function, because with the coefficient function I want to do algebraic geometry. And of course, once I'm doing rational operations with coefficient function, the fact could be in general position in any way is not stable under this. So it's better to keep generality here. Of course, now if we enlarge the coefficient field from KF to the field of all meromorphic functions, the result is still true, but it's meaningless, because a meromorphic map is always algebraically degenerate over the meromorphic function, because a meromorphic map to Pn can be expressed by n plus one meromorphic function. However, as first by Professor Tu and Lee, and also by others, was remarked, even rapidly moving targets still can give some possibility to some hyperbolicity type theorems, meaning hyperbolicity, as you know, is closely related to normal families. That means if you have an infinite family of maps, a family is called a normal family, either diverging to infinity in a uniform way, or if you find a subsequence which is converging locally uniformly. And it's an astonishing fact, that even for rapidly moving targets, meaning moving just by meromorphic function, you still have these kinds of results. Let me show it on the next screen. Namely, I gave a very recent result of Kwang and Tan, which is going to appear in Annales Polonici Mathematica, Of course, they are just refining a method of Tu and Li there a little bit. Let's see what kind of type of results you can get. You take a family of meromorphic mappings, and then you have moving hypersurfaces in BN, again in weakly general position, but they can move in any speed, slow or not. And then, of course, in order to have normal convergence, you have to need some conditions. But the conditions which you need is not that that means the hypersurface can move in any way, but what you need in order to have convergence is that all the members of the family are behaving in roughly the same way towards these moving hypersurfaces. So that means you take these 2n plus 1 moving hypersurface more or less as reference point, as moving coordinate system, which can move in any way as you will, but what you need is with respect to them, the moving, the different maps have to behave roughly in a similar way. And this you precise by the fact that if you pull back the moving divisors by the different F, then at least on compact sets, they behave roughly in the same way. At least in the same way that they are not becoming infinitely complicated. With other words, you are demanding that the inverse images still have bounded volumes. Of course, over a compact set, this is a local problem. That means the inverse images locally do not become infinitely much complicated. And in fact, Tan and Quang refined original arguments they now can prove that only for n plus 1 targets you need to count multiplicity, and for the rest it's just you just can truncate on the level 1. That means you're just taking the traces of the of the inverse images here and take measure. You even can, I left this out for not to be technical too complicated, you even can exclude still completely what happens on some analytic subset. And then, in fact, once you have this, you have a meromorphically normal family. That means after you introduce for the meromorphic functions reduced representations, which are holomorphic, then you have locally uniform convergence. Okay, now another application, especially of truncated second main theorems, are unitness theorems. We already heard some talks in Unix theorems, at least in the seminar, not in this one, but in the seminars before. Unitness theorems means you have, in the easiest case, two meromorphic functions, that means maps to P1, then you fix a certain number of points in P1, and you're looking at the pre-image, and the question is, how many points finally do I have to need such that if two maps share the pre-images for these points, then they are already the same? So this is the question. And there have been, in fact, a lot of theorems in this type, or even the points have been generalized to hyperplanes. I don't want to cite all of this. I only want to restrict today to hypersurface case, and there the only result which has been published so far, I think, is from Dilek and Roux. You take hypersurfaces, fixed hypersurface in this case of degree dg and pn in general position, meaning pointwise general position, and then you have some expressions in the degree and the dimension. And then you assume these functions agree for a certain number of divisors, which is given, in fact, by dimension degree, but especially which is given by a bound here coming from truncated second main theorem. In fact, this is just a bound from truncated second main theorem, which was obtained by An and Fuang, where they put the epsilon 1/2. And once you have sufficiently many divisors, such that on these divisors the two functions agree, then they agree already completely. Of course, the number here of hypersurfaces is comparably big here, because it depends on the truncation, and the truncation, even in the fixed target case, is quite big. Okay. Then what I did with Tan Van Tran is generalizing this also to moving hypersurfaces, because we have the second main theorem. Of course, it's also reasonable to pick up the fruits which you get from this, and this is, among others, a uniqueness theorem. The theorem is the following. We have in our setting meromorphic maps from some CM, algebraically non-degenerate, of course, over the field of coefficients. And then we need two conditions. The first condition is that the inverse images of the divisors are more or less intersecting transversally, in the sense that they don't have joint components. So every divisor is of dimension m minus 1 in CM, and the intersection always has to be m minus 2. That means they don't have joint components. This is a condition, of course, which in the case of Dulac-Roux they don't have, because they are only considering the case m equal to 1. This comes just from the generalization of dimension. And then we have to assume that f is equal to g on the inverse image of the divisors. And then we have the similar result. Then whenever you have sufficiently many divisors, which is again given in an easy form, more or less by the L, where L is just our truncation constant in second main theorem, then we have a uniqueness theorem. We can observe here that since we are using a more sophisticated technique to prove this, in fact, Dulac and Roux, they just use the main techniques which they developed in for the case of abelian variety, which is a little bit more crude. We are using a linearization technique, as more or less you do in the classical approach. You get a slightly better result, even in the fixed target case, which of course always is a particular case of moving target case. For example, here we have 2L over D. If I remember correctly, here you have something like 2mn. So this factor n, for example, we can avoid with our method. However, the method, of course, is a little bit more complicated. Building finally on a technique linearization, the hypersurfaces to hyperplanes, and then doing more or less classical work with the hyperplanes, with the moving ones, of course. Okay. Now I dare somehow, because this is exactly the theme of the conference, or not especially of the conference, but of the semester, to try to make also the relation a little bit to the results from Diophantine approximation and from the function field case, which are related to such a second main theorem. In the Diophantine approximation case, this was mainly the paper of Corvaya and Sanier, appeared in American Journal in 04, which gives more or less, not exactly, but more or less the counterpart of this second main theorem, and is also extremely important because this paper seems to be the first where the basic method, which finally was used for Diophantine approximation, for function field, and for Nevelina theory, was developed. I gave here the full result in order to do honors to the colleagues. Let me just explain a little bit what happens here. So here you have a bound of Fi. Of course, first of all, the second main theorem, I have expressed it with counting function. But you know that a counting function plus proximity function is equal to to characteristic function. So you easily can express the second main theorem in a way to say that the sum of the proximity function is bounded by the height function, which corresponds to a characteristic function. Now, of course, here this is not a proximity function. Proximity function towards the divisor is 1 over this. So that means you have to take logarithm to get the sums, and then you have to take 1 over. That means you have a minus here. So that means this inequality comes in the other direction. But this is also reasonable, because to some extent this is just the negative version of a second main theorem, saying that whenever you have this, then the entire solutions are algebraically degenerate. That means they are sitting in a proper algebraic subset. And in fact, the conjectured correspondence is just that if you have rational points which are dense, this corresponds to the existence of an entire curve. So that means if the second main theorem is violated, then entire curve is algebraically degenerate, corresponding to the fact that set of rational points is algebraically degenerate. And you have to understand this just in this way. Moreover, here I'm still giving some more precise information over the set on which the points are algebraically degenerate. This is something which in Diophantine approximation, and also, as we will see in a second, in the function field case, you have additionally. Let me now give you the function field case, which is even from what the presentation is concerned much closer than the result of the Diophantine approximation. This is due to An Wang, published in 07. So you have again these kinds of polynomials in general position. And I won't explain all the notations, but here you see exactly more or less sine per sine to have a second main theorem of the type which we had, even with n plus 1 plus epsilon. You get just this constant in front of the characteristic function once you write it with proximity functions. You have furthermore also a bound which can be considered corresponding to truncation, and you have in the function field case even you can effectively describe the set of points where this does not hold. This again is something which you have more as in Nevalina case. However, if you compare this, for example, with the result of An and Fuang, which was later, you see that this bound here is much better than theirs, because they still had an exponent n in it. That means that the function field case, which is certainly a very nice case, of course, is nevertheless independent of Nevalina's theory. That means if you have a function field case, you cannot even conclude directly the fixed target case in Nevalina case, even less the moving target case, where there are still coming other things in. So that means, although the theme of this semester is more or less just to understand the interplay between the three, so far, unfortunately, I discussed this with several specialists when preparing the talk, so far we are not yet in a situation that we have found the underlying structure of all the three which enables us to get immediately the results in all the three. We have similar techniques, and I will explain you a little bit in afterwards what it is, if I still have the time, but nevertheless, all the three subjects need separate proofs and have their proper difficulties. One cannot say that one has done, for example, the function field case and the Nevalina case is trivial. This is unfortunately for the moment not yet true. We also remark that Hu and Wang, they have even a function field analogon of the latest result of Min Hu, but I don't need to talk about this, because Julie Wang will talk on this later on this week. Okay. Now I think I will take the rest of the minutes which I have in order to give you some description of the main ideas of the proof. Of course, I cannot give you all the details. It's nevertheless, working out all the details gave a paper of more than 30 pages. which is to appear in Houston Journal of Mathematics, but of course, if you're interested, I can give you the preprint. Okay, there are three steps, in fact, of the proof. The first step is to obtain the following estimate. And here, if you compare this to the second main theorem, you see it's already quite near, because here you have the Q minus N minus 1 DTF minus the epsilon, okay, in, we have the epsilon, not the epsilon half, but anyways, this is not important. This is just, put the epsilon because there's still another epsilon half to come later on. And this integral here, by the Jensen's formula, this is more or less already the sum of the counting functions. However, what we still have is an additional term here, which we will have to estimate, and it will even turn out we have to estimate it very carefully, because in order to get truncation, you cannot only use this. The only techniques which so far I know in Nevelina theory to get truncation is to bring in the Wronskian, because the Wronskian just is a generalization, if you want, of the derivative. So that means it vanishes just if you have multiple contact, and truncation means just you can avoid to count multiple contact. You still have the result, so you can cancel out multiple contact, at least from a high multiplicity, and this technical is obtained just by dividing by the Wronskian of the functions and then estimating the things, and so we still have to bring the Wronskian in, and we will use this error term here. This equality or inequality is obtained by the basic tool, which is joint for all three approaches, meaning number theory, function field, and Nevelina theory. I call this here the filtration of Corvallis-Sagnier. If at the end I still have time, I can explain you a little bit. This is a quite nice technique to introduce certain bases which are in the polynomials of homogeneous polynomials of degree m, which are perfectly adapted to n given polynomials, which allow afterwards to estimate dimensions with respect to this filtration, for example, by using Hilbert-Sayre techniques and all this stuff. Now, of course, the question, where are the difficulties coming in our approach here from moving targets and also from our quite general notation of general position? In fact, first of all, you have an evident difficulty, but this is a difficulty which is shared with the function field case, namely that the fields of coefficients are not algebraically closed anymore. However, this is in our days not so much a problem anymore, because you have algebraic geometry also over non-algebraically closed fields. However, the difficulty which we get in our situation is a little bit bigger at this point, at least, as in the function field case, because in the function field case you can do everything over these kinds of fields, and that's it. Here, however, our notation of weakly general position is a geometric notation. That means you have n plus 1 polynomials which do not have intersection points. But if you want to use the Hilbert-Nullstellensatz, then usually Hilbert-Nullstellensatz gives you solutions in the algebraic closure of the field. But it's certainly not what we search here, because we want to have the zeros in C. C is certainly not the algebraic closure of the slowly moving meromorphic function. The algebraic closure locally would look like something like branched covering, which is geometrically worthless once you want to use it. Our trick to get around this was to look not just at one configuration of n plus 1 polynomials, but by the universal family of all universal n plus 1 polynomials. One can show by using algebraic geometry, this is more difficult, but in still in the same direction as Hilbert-Nullstellensatz, that then you have a resultant polynomial in the coefficient which vanishes if and only if within the fiber is the the n plus 1 polynomials vanishes if they have joint intersection this way around. And then I have this family at my hands, this universal family. But okay, it's not useful for me to have just universal family of polynomials. I have my coefficients, which are function, and the idea is then to plug in my coefficients, which are function, in this universal family, and then if you want like that, I pull it back to C. So a similar construction as Pittman-Wong gave in his course. However, we are only using these kinds locally, and there it helps us perfectly to control what happens. This is the basic geometric idea which we have to use, because we cannot use algebraic closure over our function field in order to do Nevelina theory, because this gives us the wrong object. This is one additional difficulty which appears. Let me continue. Okay, the second step now is, as I told you already, to estimate this error term against Wronskian, which I will need to truncate the counting functions, and the other half epsilon of TF, so that means and against something which is negligible. Here, in order to get this, in the constant coefficient case, it's rather easy. So you just introduce Wronskian coming from these kinds of linear forms in n monomials, and then it's comparably easy. However, here it's more difficult, because the Wronskian includes derivative. The Wronskian is certainly it's a determinant, including derivatives, so it's certainly linear with respect to constant coefficients, but it's not linear anymore with respect to functions. So you have to be much more careful here to estimate really these kinds of functions. However, how to do this? And there, in fact, the classical theory of moving hyperplane targets can help, because they have a technique at hand to do this. They are not comparing linear forms and linear forms with respect to these coefficients, because they are not they are uncomparable. The dimension of the one is much bigger than the other. But they put this, the technique of Steinmetz, I think, from the beginning, they put this into the vector space of a high number of multiples of coefficients. And then they show that if you have a high number of multiples of these coefficients, then if you still get one step further, then the two dimensions of that converges to one. So that means if you go to high products of the coefficient, the one coefficient which you get more by our moving targets becomes negligible. This is more or less a trick which we get from the linear case, which we generalize to the hypersurface case. Okay, another small problem, of course, is in order to get this kind of Wronskian, what do you get? You take the linear forms, then you get the linear forms, then get the Wronskian, and then you get the linear forms divided by the Wronskian. This is just more or less adding zero. And the key point, of course, is how to get rid of the term Wronskian divided by the linear forms, my linear forms divided by Wronskian, and you get rid of this by using the lemma of logarithmic derivative, or you can also use a very general form of Minruth result of second main theorem. And for this, of course, you need a reduced representation, and then you have still to get reduced representation with respect to these meromorphic coefficients. This is a mess, but it's doable, and this is what the second step is. Okay, and then the third step is I'm estimating finally the integral for counting function divided by the Wronskian in order to get the truncation. This is a quite technical estimate finally of vanishing orders, plus one geometrical thing also which happens, and which is additional difficulty in the case of moving targets here because of our very general notation of general position, because I recall to you that we are only generically in general position. That means we have to control what happens over the divisor where the resultant is zero. Then you don't have any control what happens. And in order to control this, we have again to go to our universal family, and this gives us the control what happens locally over this divisor, and this gives us control that the fact that downstairs somehow you are slowly moving or you are negligible in characteristic function translates in the fact that upstairs you are still in negligible, because this universal family just shows what happens downstairs is just what happens upstairs is just an algebraic function of what happens downstairs, an algebraic function in Nevelina series always of log r, and so it's negligible. So this is a trick how to get this through. My feeling is I still would have 2 or 3 minutes, but this will not be sufficient to get really into the details of the proof, and so I think I might stop here. Thank you very much for your interest.